Welcome to What the Fantasy, and I am Brandon Hay at HayB3.
Good evening, Brandon. Good evening, everybody. My name is Zada Kantabedian, and I'm at ZKantsFF on Twitter.
So we've got through another NFL week, a lot of disappointing performances, especially that Bills-Patriots game where the wind was going crazy. And that's actually one of the first things where I wanted to talk about, just some like quick hitter type stuff. How do the Bills, they live in Buffalo. I mean, the weather's horrible. How do they not have a sustainable running game?
I was just thinking that the other day when I heard that the weather was going to be very intense for Monday night's game. I was just like, dude, there's no way. The Bills aren't built for this kind of weather. They're not built for this kind of game. And, they hung in there actually pretty well, considering that they don't have any semblance of a run game, and the Patriots are like, this is like their element, they live in Buffalo. Like, they live in like just as harsh of conditions that the Patriots do. You know, it's time for them to, it's time for them to consider, bringing a really strong running back. And what that will do to Josh Allen, I don't know if that will benefit him or not, but yeah, maybe they just relied on Josh Allen too much and realized that they can't do that. You know, you become too predictable. I remember like their first screen pass attempt was to Emmanuel Sanders, and the defense just was, I've never seen a screen pass so well read, because they knew like they couldn't throw it more than like 5 yards down the field without the ball being like adjusted by the wind. So as soon as that pass was thrown to Emmanuel Sanders, they just read it. It was like trips coverage on the right, and they just read it, and they just destroyed that play for a loss.
Yeah, and to what you're saying about Josh Allen, they do run him quite a bit, and he only had 6 carries in that game, and it was a close game, so I was surprised by that. It's kind of like in the fourth, especially in the fourth quarter, they were like, we're not even going to try to run. Let's just hope Josh has strong enough arm to get these passes out there, which almost worked, but yeah, and it's crazy. The Patriots only threw the ball 3 times, which is insane, but I mean, once they got that lead, they got that, and then the 2-point conversion, it really helped them out.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. They were like, yeah, Josh Allen can beat Mother Nature, right? Josh, you can throw it through these winds, right? You're Josh Allen. Just throw it right through Mother Nature. Just throw it right in her face. But it was kind of funny. Yeah, three passes for the Patriots, and they just ran it like on 3rd and long every time. Like, we're just going to run it. And it was all about – it was all about which way you were going down the field, when the field flipped, and how great your punting team was and your special teams. I think it really came down to special teams and field position that night. So, yeah, really interesting game to watch, in that sense.
Definitely, yeah. And I think it was another time we just saw how great of a coach Bill Belichick is, just to understand the elements, the situational, type things. And – you would think you would throw maybe even in those conditions, maybe double-digit passes, like 10. But he was like, I'm only going to throw it when I really need to, which was only 3 times. And he said, whatever way, it has to, we have to do it to win. Where like a lot of other coaches, they get an ego and they have to think they have to win a certain way, where Belichick isn't that way. He'll change, as we've seen, he'll use one running back 1 week and then they'll throw it 40 times 1 week, then another running back. It's just he's able to change and adapt so well. It's just kind of insane how good he is, and that he's doing this now after Brady. It just even shows how much even a better coach he is when people kind of questioned him last year.
Yeah, judging Bill Belichick on a completely smoked Cam Newton was the wrong approach to take.
Definitely. So we'll move on to the next. Talk about Ja'Marr Chase. In the preseason, he had drops. Beginning of the season, he was fine. He caught all these passes. He's catching all these touchdowns. He was super efficient. I think one of the reasons the Bengals fell down so quickly in that game is, Joe Burrow threw a perfect pass to him. If he catches it, who knows? He might score a touchdown. But he bobbles it. Tips up, the Chargers get it, and then they're off to the races, and then, the Bengals get some more turnovers. So do you have any concerns with Ja'Marr Chase, not only the drops, just like how T. Higgins is taking a bigger role in that offense.
Yeah, I mean, going forward, I'm absolutely convinced that drops aren't a carryover stat to the next season. We've seen drop leaders and drops season after season not have that same problem going forward. But this season, we saw him against the Raiders have struggles catching the ball downfield. He's either not being competitive enough, or he's just having focus drops. So when we see them do that, we see them automatically pivot to T. Higgins. So I'm terrified if we see Ja'Marr Chase drop a ball again, they're like, all right, Ja'Marr, we're going to T. Why not? You know, like, why not? You can't blame the T. Higgins is just, you know, he's just as talented. He's bigger than Ja'Marr Chase. He's bigger than Ja'Marr Chase, right? T. Higgins?
I think so. I think
he's bigger. Pretty sure he is. It's just as good talent. I mean, no, he's superbly talented. So, yeah, I am concerned about Ja'Marr Chase's drops. They haven't really gone away. I mean, he's had like windows where he's been great and then the drops come back. It's just concentration stuff, man. It's just these little focus. Deontay Johnson went through it all last year and it got in his head. And we know like when these kinds of things, like when these kinds of drop problems, like get in your head, it's a mental thing. They know how to catch the ball. It's just a mental thing. Once they plant themselves in their head, it's so hard to get that out, you know, and, hopefully he does some good meditation or something, or he has a good mental cleanse to get rid of that. I think he'll bounce back. He's an awesome guy.
Yeah. And I think if I remember right, he still had a good amount of targets. It's just T. Higgins got all the, you know, got most of them. I believe T. Higgins had like 14 and he had 8, but they were trying to come back all game. So I think that was a little different. I think if it's a normal scenario, you know, where it's a close game, Joe Mixon's going to get the ball, you know, more than he did against the Chargers. So when Chase was having that great beginning of the season, I saw some people saying he's like now the wide receiver one. I think that was definitely premature. And he's still probably a borderline wide receiver one too now, kind of dependent on, you know, if he gets going early and gets those touchdowns. So, and the last thing I just want, you know, this is kind of a given, I think, but, you know, Jonathan Taylor, he's the number one running back now in fantasy, right?
It's undisputed.
I'm not going to lie. I did not. I just the way that Frank Reich uses the running backs, kind of using multiple running backs. I didn't see this from Jonathan Taylor. I thought he was talented enough to play like this. I just thought there was going to be more of a mix of the bats, but he's just being so efficient with the ball and getting more passes this year. It doesn't really matter. He's just scoring touchdowns at a crazy rate.
And discussing, like, when we discuss how coaches use their running backs, what I've learned from doing running back versus game script this season is I wanted to do it so we can get some predictive data out of it to help fantasy players understand how running backs are used within various game scripts, you know, so on and so forth. And You just can't. I mean, that it changes from year to year, and it's really dependent on the talent that's on the team. We fell for it with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We didn't take into account that they had Patrick Mahomes on the team. You know, we have to take into account, like, this is Jonathan Taylor now. He's a supreme talent. He's not Marlon Mack. He's not any of those, you know, below average running backs. We have to, like, see past. I mean, I think from going forward, like, yeah, Jonathan Taylor was in a bit of a timeshare to begin the year, but as the year wore on, talent superseded coaching tendencies. And I think going forward, ranking, doing preseason rankings, I think I'm going to adjust my logic in that the talent and the coaching tendencies should like reflect the talent that's on the team. Like, Jonathan Taylor is the team, right? Patrick Mahomes is the team. So Andy Reid is not going to lean on CEH when Patrick Mahomes is the team, right? So we have to look at these things going forward. We have to really break out of the conditioning that we get ourselves in, especially when we hear so much of the same people regurgitate the same kind of logic over and over again.
Definitely, yeah. So now we'll move in on to something you talked to me about talking about this week. About these running back wide receiver hybrids that we're getting this season more. There we go. So I did some fancy graphics here.
I love these graphics.
So first we're going to talk about Deebo Samuel. He's 6'2", 215. So he's they've kind of in San Francisco, they've kind of always used him like this. But this year, I know he's hurt now, but this year he's been the most healthy. As you see, he's had 25 rushes this year for 203 yards and the crazy thing, 5 touchdowns. He has 34 snaps in the backfield. So you see, when they put him in the backfield, they're giving him the ball. And in college, he also had 25 rushes for 154 yards and 7 touchdowns. So he's definitely involved in the running game, but they have a lot of running backs that they use. But they definitely utilize him in big parts. And for the most part, he stayed healthy this season. I know the last couple games he hasn't. So what are your feelings about Debo? Is it just that he's always going to miss a couple games just because of how physical he is, or do you think he's starting to get out of that those injuries that he's missed longer times in the year than this year?
No, I think what he's out for a groin injury right now, right?
I believe so.
I think he was out for groin injury last year too, and I don't think he's out of, like, I think all players are just going to get beat up from time to time, but. You know, I think I've seen enough to where I'm not going to label players injury prone anymore. But Debo Samuel just gets injured every year. But he's a big yards after contact guy. You know, that's his calling card. Yak, you know, catch it 1 yard past the line of scrimmage, take it to the house. That's what he does, and he has the BMI for it. His build, his structure, his speed, his attributes, you know, and the offense and the offensive philosophy with the coach, you know, Debo Samuel complements, you know, his skill sets complements, you know, the running aspect that he's utilized for.
Definitely. And maybe it's because I didn't pay attention, but I feel like they are using him in the backfield a little bit more this year. So I remember before they put him in motion and handed off to him, you know, more. But, he's definitely a big part of their offense. Now, the next player is, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson. It took him, you know, I don't know, 8 or 9 years to finally get this role. He sits 228 this year. He's much more involved in the running game, but I think that's more because the Falcons don't have any good running backs. He has 106 rushes for 489 rush yards, 4 touchdowns. He's been in the backfield for 194 snaps. And he also had 25 rushes and then 308 yards and 3 touchdowns in college. So it took Cordarrelle longer. A lot of teams chart, you know, he started off with the Vikings. I think he's been with the Bears. And then, you know, they kind of used him more in the running back fashion. But it seems like he finally, you know, found a good spot in Atlanta. And he's pretty much their running back one when we thought it was going to be Mike Davis. So what are your kind of thoughts about Cordarrelle and, you know, just how he's finally found a home?
It took this long. It took this long for Cordarrelle Patterson to be used like this. This is a testament to the incompetence of NFL coaches and how to utilize players correctly. You guys think you're so fucking smart all the time. You guys think you know how to do it. You guys just make players fit in your system. Have some imagination. Open your mind. Take the blue pill or whatever. Was it the blue pill or the red pill? How long did it take? He's near the end of his career. Now we're just seeing this, man? Come on. That's what I think of this. Come on, coaches. Wake up, man. Like, I can't. Like, it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts, dude. Like, maybe I smoked too much weed in high school. I don't know. But, like, maybe my mind's just a little bit more open. But fuck, man. Come on. Jesus. Like, this is amazing. Like, what he's doing right now is going to redefine how coaches go forward. Like, you can't stop a player like this. Like, this guy, like I said, Debo Samuel is BMI and has the size and speed and all the attributes. You don't need to draft a pass-catching running back. You don't need to draft a primary down running back. When you have a guy like this, you can do so many things. It's all about moving pieces around the formation. This is chess. It's pieces on a finite dimensional layout. You have to move pieces. You have to keep being – there has to be ingenuity on the field. You can't just be static. You know, Mike McCarthy, for all the shit he gets, he was Randall Cobb as a running back a lot in Green Bay when Mike McCarthy was there around 2011.
Definitely.
Right? So we do more of that. Find out ways you can do things. Kyle Pitts is just another guy like that. Put Kyle Pitts in the backfield, for God's sakes. If you can, if you don't want him to block, put him in the backfield. Get him more touches. Like, these guys are very explosive players. These are very supreme talents, especially like Cordarrelle Patterson. We all want him to be a wide receiver. It didn't work out. Find another way. Don't stick him on special teams. Find another way. Get him the ball more. Sick of it. And this is going to be a redefining moment for what he did, what Arthur Smith did with him. Thank God Arthur Smith did it. I love Arthur Smith for what he did. We're going to go forward. The years go forward. Let's see more of this.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, he's always been dynamic on kickoff returns. So you would think, you know, before this, you know, I'm not as heated as you are about this subject, but yeah, I mean, just get him in the backfield. You don't have to, you know, he has 100 rushes in like probably 10 games because he missed a couple. So, I mean, that's 10 rushes a game. That's all you have to do for him. Then get him like 5 to 7 targets. You get him like 15 touches a game, you know, in creative ways. He's going to help your team. So the Nets one has not been successfully utilized. And I think he is a similar player to Cordarrelle Patterson. And I hope it doesn't take this long for someone to finally use him right. But Laviska Shenault with the Jags, he sits 1-227. Last year, he had 18 rushes for 91 yards, 24 snaps in the backfield. This year, I tried to tell people that I just didn't think Urban was going to use him this way. You know, right or wrong for Urban, but that was when I thought Travis Etienne was going to be healthy. So 10 rushes for 31 yards, 14 snaps in the backfield. In college, he had 42 rushes for 280 yards and 7 touchdowns. This one is really bad because they are they're benching James Robinson sometimes, and then they're dependent on old slow Carlos Hyde in there. And, you know, the thing with Shenault that I will say is, you know, he does get a lot of nagging injuries, and he hasn't played up to his potential this year, you know, mostly at wide receiver. But he's another one that you just got to find a way to get him the ball, like Cordarrelle. So it's been a big disappointment, like everything that the Jaguars have done this year.
And no one on that team has played up to their potential, and it's not a coincidence. That team is full of potential, man. That team is full of potential. It's just a bad organization, man. If they bring the wrong people in, they don't know what they're doing, man. Let's stick to Shenault. Like, this is horrible. Like, this, I don't know, man. Just where do you find minds who are explorative enough to understand how to use players? Like, I think Sean McVay would know how to use this guy properly. Like, this.
Yeah, I think Sean Payton would do a good job. Andy Reid. Those type of guys that, you know, think, you know, it's like, that's the way, the biggest thing for these type of players, the ones that are versatile, can play multiple positions, where they get drafted. Because if they get drafted in a place where you think they'll be used correctly, then it'll be really good. But if they don't, then you see kind of this, because Shenault has a long way to go to just be like a regular wide receiver. Which is fine. He's still a young player, but while he's learning that, they have to use him in those ways. I was kind of worried because before the season, Darrell Bevell was like, you know, he needs to learn how to be a real wide receiver, and I was like, it's probably not good because you're not talented. The Jaguars are not talented enough to waste his skill, you know, because they're waiting for him to be like this, you know, this certain wide receiver, like an outside wide receiver, when that's really not what he's going to be good at.
And especially if you want to help a new quarterback like Trevor Lawrence, like, this guy can set the pace for an offense during a drive. Like, just give it to him, set up a script, give him a block, give him 2 blocks, and set the drive, gain some yards, you know? Like, he can be useful in that. Like, Trevor Lawrence is – I'm still a big believer in Trevor Lawrence. I'm not going to discount Trevor Lawrence's talent as a quarterback on behalf of Urban Meyer, dude. Trevor Lawrence is still a stud to me. Like, I cannot wait to see him play in a competent offensive system. Yeah, and you know, I really want to talk about this because it's really interesting to see how, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson used and Deebo Samuel's primarily being used. I can't think of any other wide receivers right now that are being used like that, but I think, you know, I hope that we see this more going forward because it's always fun to watch something evolve in the correct direction.
Right, and I kind of looked for what potential wide receivers coming out this year in college that could play this type of role. The only one that really does carry the ball at all is someone that I talked about in an earlier show, Wandale Robinson, out of Kentucky. But he's smaller. He's only like 185 pounds, so I don't think he could be used like this. And I think if he bolts up, it wouldn't be. So he'll probably be more used, kind of like Percy Harvin was. Fewer carries, but still kind of get him in space and type of thing. So, but it will be interesting if, you know, because you see everyone's trying to kind of copy, you know, what the Ravens are doing with Lamar, trying to get those mobile quarterbacks now and get that kind of thing going. So I think that, you know, seeing with Deebo and now Cordarrelle, they're going to try to find that player to, especially when you have mediocre running backs. Like, I like that the Falcons aren't just rolling out Mike Davis and Wayne Gallman and whoever else they have on there. When some teams just roll out, like, mediocre running backs, kind of like the Giants. When Saquon's hurt, they just roll out all these mediocre running backs and they keep on bringing back, Alfred Morris. And you could probably put Kadarius Toney back there at running back.
Yes, yes, yes. I said in the offseason, I said, Kadarius Toney, RB1. Dude, he'd be an awesome guy in the backfield for like a handful of touches every single game. The guy is the shiftiest player in the league. Are you kidding me? Giants, dude. Joke. You're a joke. Put Kadarius Toney back. Well, he's not healthy right now, but come on, man. Like,
yeah, I just
think. I get so angry about this stuff, dude. Like, it just, I'm so frustrated. I've only been heavily watching football for 10 years, but like, we see the attributes. We understand what these players are. All you got to do is take them from this part of the line of scrimmage and put them over here. I don't know. You're right. You're at Brandon. You're a brilliant man for saying that. You're a brilliant man for saying that.
Well, thank you. So I think that we might see that more in the future, but you know how much? Who knows? It kind of depends on, you know, coaches and how offensive coordinators and how they change. So moving on, we haven't done a fun topic in a few weeks, so that's what we're doing this week. Our top three binge TV shows. So I will let you go first. You can do it in whatever order you want.
Yeah, let's have some fun. I'm too mad right now. That whole segment pissed me off. I didn't know I'd get so mad. When you put up Seagrass picture, I don't know. I felt so much hate and just the dark side just took over, man. Sorry. I'm sorry, kids. I'm sorry, parents, if you had kids watching. I'll go 3-1. My third binge-worthy show is I'm split. It's either between the show called Luther, or Mindhunters. Luther was Idris Elba as a detective. Really, I like dark shows. Very dark show. Mind games. What's the cerebral, right? And Mindhunters was about the first two detectives who began to profile serial killers before serial killers wasn't a profile of a type of murderer, right? So they went and they interviewed different serial killers, which the term didn't exist yet, and they went interviewed them about the murders they committed, why they committed them, and a lot had to do with, you know, mistreatment by their mothers, and you know, it had some weird Freudian ties to like sexual misconduct and sexual deviance, and there's very graphic nature, but I love these kinds of shows. I remember when I went to my community college, I took a anatomy of murder class, and that was taught by the ex-police chief of the city I live in, and he taught us, I remember the tests were how to read a room as a detective after a crime happened in there, after a homicide happened in there, so you learn to put the pieces together to see what happened in a room, like what the victim was doing, what, you know, if there was any, like, what the motives were and stuff like that. So I love shows like that. I love detective shows. So Luther and Mindhunters. But I think I'll give the edge to Mindhunters as number three.
Yeah, I've watched a couple episodes of Mindhunters, and yeah, it's really good. Yeah, I like a lot of those shows, like Criminal Minds and those type of things that are like that. So number three for me is The Good Place. I started watching that later once it came on Netflix. I pretty much ran through all those episodes really fast. It has Ted Danson, Kristen Bell. Without giving a, without being a spoiler, kind of has this thing where, these people wake up and they're in what they think is heaven, but it's hell. And there's a lot of twists and turns. And I just think Ted Danson is like probably my favorite thing he's ever been in. And he's been in so much. I think he's hilarious. And Kristen Bell. And then there's all those other actors and actresses that, I don't know their names, but they're just great. And there's just so many twists and turns, kind of like you're talking, things that kind of mess with your mind. There's some definitely twists and turns that mess with your mind on that show. And it's on Netflix, so I definitely would recommend it. So that's number three for me.
Number two for me is Breaking Bad. And that's kind of like, that's like an easy one. But I think they designed the show to be as addictive as a substance that the show focuses on, which is like illicit drugs or crack or whatever it was. But man, that the situations that the characters would get themselves into and get themselves out of, and sometimes not get themselves out of, it can never be written again. So I mean, like, I can't remember a lot of the shows a long time ago, but I remember I just destroyed that show. I remember one show my cousin watched was this is like totally like not anything related to me, but my cousin was watching Lost, and I would always walk in. Did you ever watch Lost?
I watched a couple episodes of it, but I couldn't really get into it.
I'd always come in like after work, and he would be sitting in the living room, like, because we lived together for a couple of years. He'd be sitting in the living room, like, in the dark with the blinds closed. Sunny day outside, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm like, dude, what's going on? What's happening in the show? He's like, all right. So there's, like, a smoke creature, and there's, like, a thing with a nuclear shelter. But, like, and I just be like, dude, this show's so stupid. He's like, I know, but I can't stop watching it right now. Like, so there's also those binge shows where they're so bad, but you're like, I have to finish it. And he went through, like, every season. But yeah, Breaking Bad, obviously, if you haven't seen Breaking Bad, you'll love it. I don't know anybody that hasn't loved Breaking Bad. Fantastic. Fantastic. One of the best shows ever made. Go check it out.
All right. And number two for me is Ozark, another show on Netflix with Jason Bateman. It's about, money laundering and all this stuff. There's crazy redneck hillbillies that, grow weed and are trying to shoot people. There's Mexican drug lords, and they go through all this stuff with, all the different characters. I love the show. It's definitely binge worthy. My wife usually doesn't like binge shows like that, but we binge those when that came out. Waiting for season four to come out. I don't know when it's going to. I know with COVID, it stopped a lot of production on shows, but I pretty much like anything that Jason Bateman's in. I think he can do serious roles. He can do funny roles. And, I just think a lot of the characters and a lot of the storylines I love. And, there's the shock value in the show. There's funny times and there's like, crazy shit that happens. So yeah, that's number two for me.
That's definitely more on the Breaking Bad edge too, because it's the same kind of deal. Like he gets stuck into like making drugs for like the mob or something like that. Like I'm already spoiling. Nah, it's not spoiling shit. I'm just kind of giving the basic storyline. But yeah, just like Breaking Bad, right? You're like, oh, dude, like this definitely is crazy. Yeah. Like you have to be like the main character was. They have to be very intelligent to get themselves out of such tight squeezes. I'd be dead 1,000 times if I was able.
Yeah, guys. Definitely.
I'm dead. No, screw it. I'm dead. I'm gonna go get a pack of cigarettes and smoke and fuck it. But like, yeah. So my number one show is The Peaky Blinders. The Peaky Blinders is an amazing show. I forgot the main actor's name. James Killian. I forgot the guy. The main actor's name. But a great cast of characters set in like post World War I England. About just his family. There are a few brothers and aunt. They're called the Peaky Blinders. They run like a sports racket. They start off as like you're just a strong group of criminals but very, very smart, savvy guys. Great character development, beautiful backdrops, just the grime. You feel the grime that they live in. Like it's the beginning of the industrial age in England. So you feel, you see, like it's just all coal and fire and blacksmiths, and buildings are starting to be like huge buildings are starting to be constructed, and like the age of automobiles is just entering the scene. But like you see, like they're ex World War One vets too, so they're like mentally kind of screwed up in the head, and they drink a lot and they smoke a lot, and it's a lot of just fighting. It's a really good show though, like the fashion. Like the clothes they wear, the best tailored suits I've ever seen. Like the fashion's amazing, the haircuts are great. Like it's just an awesome show if you like good gangster, like English gangster shows. Like a lot of great appearances in there. I'm not going to give it away, but a lot of good appearances by special guest stars that I think we all love.
Yeah, I've seen that on Netflix, but I haven't watched it, so I'll have to check that out. So. My number one, and it's been this way for a while since it's, you know, it ended a while ago, is How I Met Your Mother. I love the show. I know the last season wasn't great and a lot of people didn't like the ending. You know, I probably watched that whole series through at least 7 or 8 times. Sometimes I just, you know, put it on if I just need something on, you know, while I'm doing something else. And there's a few episodes that I will watch over and over again. You know, it's just, you know, funny things in like it's centered around them hanging out in a bar. I love to go to bars. So, you know, I can relate, you know, and it's just kind of like the crazy shenanigans you do as you grow up. And I pretty much love all the characters and at sometimes hate all the characters. So it's like a love and hate thing. But that's number one on my binge-worthy TV shows.
Right on, man. Yeah, it's definitely a great show. I didn't get too good into it, but like I was telling you, actually, that cousin I told you was watching Lost binged How I Met Your Mother as well. And I would always jump into episodes, and I always found it super funny. Yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah, so we'll close out the show with we're going to go over some teams, if they're a pretender or a contender for the Super Bowl. First team we're going to talk about is the Patriots, who just won. They're 9-4. They're crazily the number one seed in the AFC. They're 8th in points per game, 1st in points allowed per game. So what is your opinion on the Patriots in the Super Bowl? Are they a pretender or a contender?
They're a contender, but they will get destroyed if they play Tom Brady or if they play, you know, I think Tom Brady's got them, no problem. They're a very good team right now. They're definitely a contender for the Super Bowl. They're very well built on both sides of the ball. They're solid. They make very little mistakes. Matthew Judon is playing out of his mind right now. He's having a very good season, and everybody's fulfilling their roles. You see Ramondre Stevenson coming on and complimenting and just beasting, and he's making very little mistakes. The offensive line is doing their job. Mac Jones is maturing nicely in the offense. He's starting to pick it up, and he has picked it up. So they are a contender, I believe so, but they can get beat in the sense that if they find a much more savvy quarterback to come in and just throw the ball over the yard, I don't see Mac Jones keeping up with them.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think they're kind of in the middle. I definitely think with Belichick and like the pieces they have, they're contenders, but I do think there are certain teams that they would play where either if they could score points on them, I don't know if Matt Jones could keep up. And they're, you know, let's just face it, their wide receiver weapons aren't, you know, great. I mean, I think they're good players in the scheme. They work very well, but I could definitely see. But the thing is, if they finish as the number one seed and all those teams have to come to Foxborough, I mean, I could totally see, you know, them playing in the snow and playing the same way they did the other night. So it kind of depends on that. If they can keep the number one seed, I could very well see them making their way to the Super Bowl. You know, if they win the Super Bowl, I'm not sure. But, yeah, they're kind of borderline to me in the middle. So the Nets team is the Tennessee Titans. They're the number two seed at 8-4. They're 12th in NFL in scoring, 23rd in the NFL with points allowed. Obviously, some of these numbers are skewed, you know, before they hit injuries with Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown. So I think they're a pretender just because of the injuries they've had. I just think just too many of them. I mean, I don't even know if Julio's going to play. Same with AJ Brown. He just can't stay healthy, and just they're throwing different running backs out there. And I think we've just seen Ryan Tannehill is a good quarterback, but he's not the type of quarterback that can carry this team.
Yeah, they're not a contender. It's hard to say they're a pretender because Derrick Henry is injured, AJ Brown's injured, Julio Jones is injured. The offense doesn't seem like it's clicking. They lost another receiver. Like they lost like another one of the receivers that came in and filled in for like AJ Brown and Julio Jones that week. So they're just getting decimated by injuries. They could sneak into the playoffs, sure, but I don't think they're going to go anywhere without Derrick Henry or like a prominent run game, because I don't see Ryan Tannehill really stepping up and taking this team anywhere.
Yeah, definitely. And they have been better against the run this year, but they're still 26th in pass yards allowed. So, you know, come playoff time, I just don't think, kind of like what we were seeing with Matt Jones, if he got into a track meet, I don't know if he could do that. Just same thing with Tannehill, because he's better when they can use that play action and he doesn't have to just keep on dropping back. So the next team is the Chiefs. They're 8-4, the four seed in the AFC. 25.3 points per game, 13th in the NFL. Points allowed, 21.6, 8th in the NFL. So their offense is clearly not as good as it used to be. The defense has been improved the past couple weeks, and it seems like they're depending on the defense and just getting by. And I just don't know if this offense is going to click again this year, because I looked in 5 out of the last 6 games, Mahomes has thrown 1 or 0 touchdown passes, which is crazy. It's crazy. So
that's that. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how you can say they're not a contender just as long as they have Patrick Mahomes, but I don't feel great about their chances again, you know, against those other teams if that offense isn't playing at a high level.
Yeah, that. We know that offense to click, and we traditionally know that offense to just score at will, whenever they want. They're going to get it done. I don't know what's happening. There's something very off over there. And you brought up the point that I was going to bring up. They seem to be relying more on their defense. Their defense has picked up where their offense has fell off. So they're a contender. And, you know, by hook or by crook, you get your W's whichever way you can. If they're not going to do it, but they're always going to have Patrick Mahomes there. And if Patrick Mahomes needs to go and drive the ball, then, you know, so be it. Let him go try to do that. But it's not clicking right now. And I think if they want to win a title, they're going to need to address that. Because sooner or later, it's going to come down to Patrick Mahomes and what he can do to help that team win. That defense is not going to be able to win it. For the Chiefs, they're going to need Patrick Mahomes to step up and make some plays. They're going to need their receivers. They're going to need somebody else to step up outside of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. That's what I think they need.
Definitely. I think – I'm guessing their kind of thoughts are they're going to kind of team just get in the playoffs, you know, and then see what happens. So if their defense can help that offense limp into the playoffs, and then you just got to hope that offense, you know, once it's, you know, win or go home, they start getting it together. But I agree, they're a contender, but there's definitely concerns. But if the defense can just play well enough to make it a close game in the fourth quarter, I mean, give Mahomes the ball, I mean, you've got to feel pretty good, you know, having him, you know, just making a game-winning drive. So – I agree on the contender, but definitely some a little bit of more doubt this year than other years. So now we'll flip to the NFC, go with the Dallas Cowboys. They are 8-4, the number 4 seed in the AFC. They're 2nd in NFL in points per game, 12th in points allowed. I'll let you go first with your analysis on the Cowboys and if they're a pretender or contender.
I believe they're a contender. I mean, they just have too much talent to not get it done. I mean, they're solid all around. Dak Prescott's fine. They're more of a bipolar team because they're just not showing up when they should for some games, and they understand that as an organization. for some reason, their guard gets let down. Their defense is awesome. I love their defense. I've never seen the Cowboys' defense look that good in such a long time. So that looks amazing. Those guys execute. They're smart heads-up players in the secondary and on the front. Dak Prescott still has mental errors. He still has flaws sometimes. But what I am looking forward to is possibly Tony Pollard emerging in this backfield and creating much more efficiency in his backfield right now. Ezekiel Elliott has fallen by the wayside, and I don't think he's going to be relevant for the remainder of the regular season. The offseason comes, it's a different story. They need to start playing for the offseason now. They have a healthy lead in the division. So let Tony Pollard bring that team to the playoffs and let Zeke take over from there. I do think they're a contender, but they need to be consistent. That's the only thing.
I pretty much agree with all your points. I don't know if you watched the Cowboys game last week, but you could clearly see Zeke, even when Zeke made a nice run to the outside, he was hobbling just to run. I know he wants to tough it out, and I mean, he's trying to show his credits wrong that he's still good, but they should set him, like you said, for the playoffs, because Tony Pollard, you saw on that one run, he's just so electric, and he's doing well. He's more efficient, and something's not totally right with their passing game right now. Maybe it's because, wide receiver's been hurt, but I think they could lean on Pollard more to get, more of those big plays, and like you said, that defense is very good, so they could be a very scary team if they could just play more consistently, like you said. So, yes, I think they're a contender. They just need to stop, like you said, the bipolar where they play really well one week and play horrible the next week. So I agree with everything that you said. And the last team, I didn't think that we would even have that question. This question, early in the year, the LA Rams, they're 8-4, the fifth seed. Fifth in the NFL in points per game, 16th in the NFL in points allowed per game. They brought in all these players. They brought in Odell Beckham. I mean, they did lose Robert Woods, but they've, brought in Von Miller and all these players. And I don't know. They just seem like they're kind of sleepwalking like through a game. So they're another one that I kind of go in the middle. They have all the talent, but they're just not playing consistently. And Stafford is making mistakes each game. So what is your opinion on them?
It's like a fake ass Rams, dude. Fake, but Stafford is a bust this year, dude. They messed up, dude. Stafford isn't getting it done. They messed up, man. I know Robert Woods got injured. Fine. Yeah. But come on, man. Like, do something. Defense, do something. This team isn't playing. Did Sean McVay piss them all off? Like, what happened? They're not playing for their coach. They're not playing for each other. They're not. I mean, Jalen Ramsey's even playing well. Like, there's nothing. Nothing's happening with that team. This team's not a contender, man. I don't see it. I don't see it primarily because Stafford. I don't see him being that guy. He's lacking that sense of just dominance, that leadership. He should be dominating in that system. Maybe it's the system. Maybe it's McVay. I don't know. I don't buy it though, man. I look at that. I can't even watch them, dude. I can't even watch that team play. It's brutal. I don't like it. I don't like it. You're muted.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. And this is this is truly the test for Stafford. I mean, everyone that says that, he chokes in big moments and everything. I mean, he's finally on a good team. He has weapons. He has McVay. I don't know what's going on with the defense either, because they should be shutting people out. If not shutting people out, they should hold them to, under 10 points. They handled the Jaguars last week, but I mean, it was like a 13-7 game, yeah. I think at some point. And they probably should have won that game like 59-0 or whatever.
Dude, they're going to get smoked. They're going to get smoked by the Cardinals. They're going to get smoked. They're going to go home. And they're going to just crawl in their beds. They're going to go and get, prescription medication because they're just going to be suffering from, they're going to be destroyed. They're going to get smoked, and it's going to be over. The whole team's going to fall apart. Watch. I don't know. I don't know about buying the Rams.
Yeah, and I mean, for them, they trade away, like, you know, all the draft picks, so they went all in. So if they don't win, I mean, they don't get that Super Bowl. They're not going to have much to show for it because, you know, when these players are going to get older and they don't have any young players. And I don't know if it matters because it doesn't seem like McVay drafts very well either. He made some bad. Like the Tutu Atwell pick. I mean, I think he returns punts for them. I mean, I don't know how you use a second round pick on someone that, like, first of all, is so small that, like, I don't get it. So, yeah, maybe I've always said that's why they trade their draft picks, because they know they're horrible at drafting. So they should at least get good players for it.
Like the Patriots, dude. Like the Patriots, man.
Yeah.
Except for Mac Jones.
Yeah, they I've been very surprised with Mac, and he's by far the best rookie quarterback. I think this past week, just briefly, you know, I think Zach Wilson's starting to look a little better. I think it's a wash for Trevor Lawrence because the Jets just look awful. And, you know, Fields has had injuries, and we can't get Trey Lance on the field because they keep on throwing Jimmy G out there. So maybe we'll get to see more of all those rookies next year. So that's our show for this week. So I am Brandon at HeyB3.
My name is Alec Cansabini and ZCansFF, and I just wanted to tell everybody to take care of each other this holiday season. Brandon, you take care of your people. I'll take care of you. You take care of me. And it was another great episode. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, see you guys next week.